Hare Krishna devotees. Hare Krishna devotees. My name is Ekavir Das, and on behalf of the residents here in Gitanagari Dham, we welcome you to Sri Gitanagari Dham. Shri Shri Radha Damodar Ki. This is the home of their beloved lordship, Shri Shri Radha Damodar, and we're most grateful that you all are present here. So this is a very special weekend. The petals of ISKCON lotus. In ISKCON, we have so many wonderful, wonderful devotees that represent the petals, and ISKCON is that lotus. And one of such wonderful petals of this lotus is here with us this evening, His Grace Tomohar Prabhu. His Grace Tomohar Prabhu Ki.
Jai Prabhupada.
So His Grace Tomohar Prabhu, he has so many different skills. I'm in awe just to be in his presence. He holds a PhD in educational psychology. He served as an administrator as well as a faculty member of several different graduate schools and universities. And he's used these skills to assist in Srila Prabhupada's movement and pressing on in Srila Prabhupada's movement. He's served in so many different capacities. I had to actually get something printed out because it's just absolutely amazing. He served as a temple president, a BBT manager, a director of two Gurukulas, the director of the Child Protection Office. He and his wife, Mantrini Mataji, have served as members of the Grihastha Vision Team, and currently he serves as a GBC member. He served as a GBC member for the last 10 years, and he's on the executive committee of the International GBC.
No longer.
North America.
North American chair.
Okay, North American chair. And when I actually looked at this bio, I just thought, I said, Prabhu, is there anything that you don't do? I mean, he has so many different skills. And when was the last time you've been in Gitanagari?
Many years. I'm very, very happy to be here.
All right. Not as happy as we are to have you here. And so he travels throughout the globe conducting seminars and and counseling devotees individually as well as grihasthas, and we're most grateful to have him here this evening. So please, let's give him a warm welcome by saying Haribo. Haribo! His Grace Tomohar Prabhu Ki Jai.
Well, thank you very much. I feel like I won't be able to live up to that very, very warm introduction. It's been many, many years since I've been to Gitanagari, and I was actually very happy and grateful to Rompad Swami particularly for this opportunity, for inviting me to come. And I know that he's held this wonderful retreat and seminar for quite a few years, right? Many years? Many years. And so this is my first time here, and very happy to be here. I think our theme is very exemplary, very wonderful theme that we're having, talking about the 50th anniversary of the incorporation of ISKCON, of Srila Prabhupada coming to the Western world and bringing Krishna consciousness. This idea of the petals of the lotus is very, very nice, because over the weekend we'll have the opportunity to look at many different aspects of what ISKCON is doing, what ISKCON has become, all based upon, of course, the inspiration, the guidance of Srila Prabhupada. So I've been asked to talk about the founding of ISKCON and its seven purposes. And, of course, those seven purposes we probably have seen many times. They used to always be printed in the Back to Godhead. I don't think they are anymore. But these were the foundational principles that Srila Prabhupada gave us when he incorporated the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in July 1966. So we are getting very, very close to the actual 50th anniversary. So I want to talk a little bit about, I'm going to read a little bit about the story of the founding and then talk about these seven purposes. So if you'll indulge me, we'll go through this. Interestingly, my first experience of celebrating the anniversary of the incorporation of ISKCON was 1976, which was the 10th anniversary. And 1976 also happened to be the 200th anniversary of the United States, right? It was the bicentennial. Those of you who are not, a lot of you are too young, but those of you who are close to my age remember that. And Srila Prabhupada happened to come and visit us in Potomac, Maryland at that time. He came over the 4th of July weekend, and because we celebrate the, you know, these Vaishnava holidays according to the Vedic calendar, it was right around that time, around the 4th, that the 10th anniversary of the founding of ISKCON occurred. So I'll give you a very quick story. When Srila Prabhupada was in Potomac, he heard they were going to have a huge celebration and fireworks on the 4th of July down at the mall, you know, the big mall between the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Memorial and that whole area. And Srila Prabhupada said, well, let us go. And so we thought, sure, let's all go. So we all piled into cars and vans and had this whole sort of caravan going down to Washington, D.C., along with probably about 500,000 other people. I mean, this was, you know, a huge event. And so those of you who know the George Washington Parkway, which is sort of like on a bluff over the Potomac River, or it's kind of up on a cliff, we were going that way, and it was very, very slow going because, of course, there was so much traffic. And because it's a nice vantage point, all along there were parked people who were... Now they call it, I think in football games, they call it tailgating. Well, that's kind of what they were doing. Basically, having a picnic and getting very intoxicated for the most part, waiting for the evening for the fireworks to begin. So, Prabhupada, there was a van full of brahmacharis having a huge, loud kirtan. Prabhupada was the next car, and we were all following behind. And as the kirtan slowly went by, of course, many people were chanting, and sometimes they were making fun of it, Hare Krishna, and like that. Anyway, a long story. I don't want to detract too much from our topic tonight. But when Srila Prabhupada came back, he said, what was very nice, he said, was that they were all hearing the holy name and chanting. He said, even if they were chanting in jest or chanting to make fun of it, it doesn't matter. He says, their spiritual life has begun. So it was of course, around the 10th anniversary of ISKCON. So we actually presented Prabhupada with a big cake, you know, for the 10th anniversary. And, of course, as we do in America, the host or the hostess cuts the first piece. Now, in India, I don't think they do that. So they handed Srila Prabhupada the knife, and you really don't ask your spiritual master to cut your cake and serve you, right? So we were a little unclear on the concept, and Srila Prabhupada looked a little bewildered. But, you know, I hate this. I don't want it to sound mundane, but Prabhupada was a good sport. I mean, he sort of went along with whatever we were doing. Okay, so what do I do? And then, so he did it. He cut the first piece, and then he handed the knife to somebody else. And so we celebrated the 10th anniversary there in Potomac when Srila Prabhupada was there. It was a very wonderful visit. Now, 40 years later, we're up to the 50th. So this is a very momentous occasion when we talk about the founding of ISKCON. Why? Because it's not just another organization, a religious society. Of course, all religious societies or organizations, they mark these milestones. And just to be around 50 years as a new religion is pretty significant. Because, you know, many, many religions and new religions actually come and go. Most of them fail after the first generation of adherents, you know, leave. But we have now been here for 50 years. We have our second generation, our third generation. We have one student in our Gurukul in Alachua who is fourth generation now. So we're getting, we're actually becoming a culture, a society that's intergenerational. But besides the fact that we've just stuck around, this is commemorating the spreading of Lord Chaitanya's Sangirtan movement. As Srila Prabhupada left India, came to America, came to the Western world, and we all know the stories, had great personal difficulty, suffering two heart attacks along the way, coming to America with knowing hardly anyone, one address in Butler, Pennsylvania, a few rupees in his pocket, and a trunk full of books. We all heard that story many times, I'm sure. But what that represented was Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan, the holy name, being spread to every town and village. This was the beginning. And when Srila Prabhupada incorporated the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, it gave it shape, it gave it form, it gave it direction. Now he had a vehicle that he could use for spreading Krishna consciousness throughout America and eventually throughout the whole world. So this organization, as I said, was the vehicle that Prabhupada used, and he often talked about that. I was doing a little search in the Veda base as I was sort of preparing for this presentation, and I saw that in Prabhupada's books and purports, which are mainly spiritual topics, not his letters where he may have been given instructions, which you would expect, but actually right in Prabhupada's books and purports, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, or ISKCON, is mentioned 234 times in Prabhupada's books. So was ISKCON important to Prabhupada? Absolutely. It was vitally important to Prabhupada. It was his life and soul. It was what he put all of his energy into. We usually read a verse as we begin these presentations, so I thought I would at least give this one. Emata bangara lokara kaila mahahita namadiya bhakta kaila padana pandita. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu contributed the greatest benefit to the people of East Bengal by initiating them into the Harinam, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and making them learned scholars by educating them. Srila Prabhupada says, following the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Krishna consciousness movement is distributing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and inducing people all over the world to chant. We are giving people an immense treasury of transcendental literature, translated to all the important languages of the world, and by the grace of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this literature is selling profusely, and people are chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with great delight. This is the preaching process of the Chaitanya cult. Since the Lord wanted this preached all over the world, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is acting in a humble way so that the vision of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may be fulfilled all over the world, especially in the Western countries. So we can see the very strong linkage that Srila Prabhupada gave to the spreading of Lord Chaitanya's movement and the development of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And also, of course, we know that this ISKCON Society is part of the Chaitanya tree. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, thus the branches of the Chaitanya tree formed a cluster or society with great branches covering all of the universe. And Srila Prabhupada says in that purport, our International Society for Krishna Consciousness is one of the branches of the Chaitanya tree. So this is a very, very important movement, and we are commemorating the incorporation, the beginning of this movement, 50 years ago from today. And we should understand that its importance. It is not an organizational issue or, you know, something like that. But this is a significant spiritual milestone in the history of the world. So the story of ISKCON's incorporation, I think, is rather interesting. And I'm going to read from the Lilamrita. Prabhupada said, we shall call our society ISKCON. Prabhupada had laughed playfully when he first coined the acronym. He had initiated the legal work of incorporation that spring while still living on the Bowery. But even before its legal beginning, he'd been talking about his International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and so it appeared in letters to India in the Village Voice. A friend had suggested a title that would sound more familiar to Westerners, International Society for God Consciousness. But Prabhupada had insisted, Krishna consciousness. God was a vague term, whereas Krishna was exact and scientific. God consciousness was spiritually weaker, less personal. And if Westerners didn't know that Krishna was God, then the International Society for Krishna Consciousness would tell them by spreading his glories in every town and village. But to register ISKCON legally as a non-profit, tax-exempt religion required money and a lawyer. Carl Jurgens had already gained some experience in forming religious, political, and social welfare groups, and when he met Prabhupada in the Bowery, he agreed to help. he contacted his lawyer, Stephen Goldsmith. When Carl told him about Prabhupada's plans, he was immediately fascinated by the idea of setting up a religious corporation for an Indian Swami. He visited Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue, and they discussed incorporation, tax exemption, Prabhupada's immigration status, and Krishna consciousness. Mr. Goldsmith visited Prabhupada several times, etc. Mr. Goldsmith came to Prabhupada's lecture in Kirtan to get signatures from the trustees of the new society. At the end of the lecture in the New York storefront, Srila Prabhupada said, "All right, Mr. Goldsmith, you can ask anything." Mr. Goldsmith stands, and he didn't ask a question. And to the surprise people gathered, he makes a short announcement asking for signers on an incorporation document of the Swami's new religious movement. Prabhupada said, "They are present here. You can take the addresses now. Bill, you give your address, and Raphael, you give yours, and Don, Roy, Mr. Green." As the meeting breaks up, those called on to sign as trustees came forward, standing around in the little storefront, waiting to leaf cursorily through the pages the lawyer had produced from his thin attaché and to sign as he directs. Yet not a soul among them is really committed to Krishna consciousness. The first trustees who hold office for a year until the first annual meeting of the corporation are Michael Grant, who would sound his name and address without ever reading the document. Of course, Michael Grant is Mukunda Goswami, and Mike's girlfriend Jan, and James Green. No one seriously intends to undertake any formal duties, but they're happy to help Swami by signing his fledgling society into legal existence. None of them know exactly what a half dozen legal-sized type pages mean, except Swamiji is forming a society. But Srila Prabhupada is planning for the future. And he's planning for much more than just tax exemption. He's trying to serve his spiritual predecessor and fulfill the scriptural prediction of a spiritual movement that is to flourish for 10,000 years in the midst of the age of Kali. Within the vast Kali age, a period which is to last 432,000 years, the 1960s are but an insignificant moment. So that's from Sasaradas Goswami's Lilamrita, the story of how incorporation came about. And I think this was so typical of the way that Srila Prabhupada often worked. We had very little knowledge. Of course, I wasn't around in those days. I didn't come until 1972. But we distrusted Srila Prabhupada implicitly. So Srila Prabhupada said, "We should form a society." Of course, we form a society because Prabhupada knew what to do. Embedded within those incorporation papers are the seven purposes of ISKCON. When any corporation forms, particularly a nonprofit organization, you have to list what are the purposes of that society. This is pretty standard in most states' incorporation. And usually those are very boilerplate. You know, to do this, to educate, to do, you know. And, you know, you can almost practically find, you know, like a sample and, you know, just like fill it in and put your name in and form your corporation. This was very different. These, I don't know how, I have no idea, I wasn't there, I haven't really heard how long Prabhupada spent on this or where he came up with it, whether he just scribbled it down or whether, but somehow or another, we can see that these seven purposes were absolutely inspired by Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada created these purposes which still stand today as the foundational building blocks of our movement, the foundational purposes, and the foundational, more or less, blueprint of how we create, how we develop our society, and how we preach Krishna consciousness. So, the seven purposes were very important. They were in the Articles of Incorporation. Let's take a look at them for a moment. They're basically, this is a synopsis of them. But they basically talk about propagating spiritual knowledge, propagating a consciousness of Krishna, to bring the members of the society together within each other and nearer to Krishna, to teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement, to erect holy places of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna, and to bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler and more natural way of life. And seven, to distribute spiritual periodicals, magazines, books, and other writings. I'm going to break these down a little bit and discuss how Srila Prabhupada instituted some of these or why they were spiritually important or how they fit in with our scriptures and the greater spiritual mission of Lord Chaitanya. But I thought, I don't know how much time we have. We go to 8, right? I was thinking, since this is a seminar, you know, it's going to be a little more interactive, that we could talk about these a little bit and see what your ideas were. I don't know if we have time. I was thinking about breaking into groups, but maybe we'll just do this together. Can you give some ideas? Think about what this means. To propagate, let's see. The first one is to propagate spiritual knowledge. And, okay, the full text is to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all peoples in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalances and values of life and achieve real unity and peace in the world. Now, that's quite a goal, isn't it? That's quite a purpose. Can anyone think of how Srila Prabhupada did this? How did he systematically propagate spiritual knowledge, or what was his plan for doing this? What are some of the aspects of it? What's that? Through his books. So what did that mean? It meant, what did he have to do as far as books? Did he have the books?
He had to write them. Yes. And find a way to distribute them to the general mass of people.
Yes, he had to write them and distribute. And there's a part in the middle, too, which was printing them. And that was not an insignificant thing either. You know, finding the prices. He went to Japan, you know, to, you know, get published printers and publishers. So, yeah, the cornerstone, of course, that's also in number 7, is that I have distribution of books. How else did propagate spiritual knowledge? Yes. Here's a mic.
Systematic education through Gurukul system, so yeah. Training young children so that later they could bring about the
very good
and peace.
Yes, through a Gurukul system. And tomorrow we have a seminar on ISKCON education where we'll talk about that. Yeah. What else? Madhiji?
Okay. There is Bhagavatam class every morning. Srimad Bhagavatam class.
Yes.
Every day.
Yes, to the devotees, propagating spiritual knowledge through classes, through hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam every morning. We used to also hear the Bhagavad Gita every night, but I don't think that happens much anymore. Right? But, you know, in the old days, when... Anything else? Okay, how about number 2? To propagate a consciousness of Krishna. Which we could say, to propagate a consciousness of Krishna as is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Somewhat similar, right? Yes. You use the microphone here.
To become Krishna conscious ourselves first, and then so we can be somewhat of an example.
Are people hearing this? Okay, I'm just guess I'm not. Say hello.
To become Krishna conscious ourselves in order to propagate it in the form of being an example.
Yes, to become Krishna conscious ourselves, to be examples. Absolutely, that's good. What else in the over here? Go ahead and then we'll go to the women.
I was thinking about all the effort that Prabhupada put in paintings and the artwork, and that distributed the consciousness of Krishna as in his books. So.
Very nice, through the art. Actually, Prabhupada, you know, at one point he talked about that we would spread Krishna consciousness through culture, you know, through the development of culture. And Prabhupada very much liked not only the paintings, he loved the plays that devotees put on, music, you know, so many things like this. These were very, very important to Srila Prabhupada. He really enjoyed the creative arts as they were used in Krishna's service. Yeah, Madhiji over here.
Through celebrating the functions Janmashtami and Ratayatra, and by chanting also.
Through Ratayatra festivals, yes. Yeah, very good. Okay, let's look at number 3. To bring the members of society together with each other and near, I'll read the whole thing, nearer to Krishna, the prime entity, and thus to develop the idea within the members and humanity at large that each soul is part and parcel of the quality of Godhead Krishna. How did he bring the members of the society together?
By building temples.
Building temples, absolutely. Prabhupada is very clear about that. We have to have places for devotees to come together, to worship together, to live together. Yeah.
Through Sunday feast.
Sunday feast, yeah. Sure, that was a... it's interesting, you know, that, you know, Prabhupada actually, I was reading in the Lamrita, Prabhupada actually coined the term love feast. I thought that, you know, the hippie devotees did, but Prabhupada actually did. I think taking the sort of the hint from the surrounding culture around him, you know, and yes, see, Prabhupada started the Sunday feast to bring people near together. Anything else? Right, that's some great ideas. To teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement. That's an easy one. What's one of our iconic images of Srila Prabhupada in the early days of New York? Harinam, where was he chanting? Right, we all, the Tompkins Square part. In other words, yes, Prabhupada himself began this chanting. He demonstrated, he showed the process of the chanting of the holy name of Sankirtan Jagya. And encouraged all the devotees. Right. To erect holy places of transcendental pastimes, dedicate the personality of Krishna. Examples of that? Just go ahead.
By constructing temples.
I'm sorry?
By constructing temples.
Constructing temples, yeah. Any specific, as far as places of pilgrimage? Yes.
The Krishna Balaram Mandir. And,
Krishna Balaram Temple. And where else did Prabhupada start out? There's places of pilgrimage. Vrindavan and Mayapur. From the very beginning. And Prabhupada began those projects very early in the movement when he returned to India after being in the West some time, encouraged his devotees, his disciples, to develop those projects. Very personally involved, especially with both Mayapur and Krishna Balaram, very personally involved with developing those. And he made it clear that we needed to develop these places of pilgrimage, not just so we could have a few devotees living there, but as places for devotees throughout the world to come. These are international projects, you know, to be appreciated by devotees who can come from America and Europe and Africa and South America and actually experience the Holy Dham. Experience that. Prabhupada Swami.
I've always understood that number five, not specifically or, you know, especially in terms of Vrindavan and Mayapur, I've always understood it in terms of a temple where there's Krishna,
yeah,
or deity and persons come together, just like calling the temple. This temple is, I heard Prabhupada say it several times in New York, and I heard he said it several times in Los Angeles. This temple is not in New York, it is in Vaikuntha.
Sorry.
And so establishing a Vaikuntha Dham in Los Angeles, in New York, and wherever there is persons coming together doing what you do in the spiritual world.
Very good. Yes, we are in the spiritual world at this very moment. Here with Radhadamodar. I first saw Radhadamodar, guess where? On Vishujan Swami's bus. When I was in Miami in 73, 74, Vishudhan Swami used to come and spend the winter in Miami, you know, where it was warm, and he spent like a month or two, and, you know, with the bus, and I believe at least one year he put Radhadamodar on the altar in Miami, and then other times he had him just in his bus, so we got a lot of association and got to take darshan of Radhadamodar. Very nice. And of course now they have a very wonderful home where they're taken care of nicely. Right. Okay. To bring the members closer together for a purpose of teaching a simpler, more natural way of life. Any examples of that? Yes?
Here at Gitanagari.
Here at Gitanagari. Oh. Yes, go ahead.
Gitanagari, the farm community that vision of a simple, natural way of life that's centered on the temple.
This was very important to Prabhupada. And of course, I'm going to be talking about that, how very early on that Srila Prabhupada tried to establish that idea of a simple natural way of life, New Vrindavan, Gita Nagari, etc. And also, even within the city temples, even the idea of a simple natural way of living for all devotees, even if you weren't in a farm community. But this is obviously a great example of that. And to distribute spiritual periodicals, magazines, books, and other writings. Fairly self-explanatory, as someone mentioned earlier. We talked about the development of... Of course, Prabhupada started writing many years before he came to America, continued writing right up to his very last breath. Amazing, up until into the 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It was really was his life and soul. It was his mission to translate and distribute these writings. Yeah. Okay, let's look at them a little bit more. We were going to discuss in groups. We just did. Okay. I was looking at these, and I think if we look at the seven principles, we can see two different dimensions are here. At least this is just analysis I did. You could look at it from many different ways. But if you break them down, some of the principles are really about preaching, educating, outreach activities, the missionary activities of ISKCON, which we always think of as primary. Prabhupada formed the society to spread Krishna consciousness. But there's also the idea within these principles of providing for the spiritual needs of the devotees. Two of them say bringing the members of the society together. So we have both sort of the external purposes and the internal purposes, right? We have the idea that we are spreading Krishna consciousness, but in order to do that, we also have to have strong devotee communities, strong devotee relationships. We need to bring the members together. This is a wonderful example, this retreat. Everyone is coming together, getting recharged, getting spiritual inspiration from one another, and then we go out and execute the mission of Srila Prabhupada. Okay. So Prabhupada really had a radical vision to change the world. I put these four in the category of missionary activities: teaching the world to live happily through spiritual knowledge, teach devotion to Krishna, propagate the chanting, publication, distribution of books. Of course, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, tells us that literature, which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes of the unlimited Supreme Lord, is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Those of us who came to Krishna consciousness in the late 60s and early 70s, I think we like this word revolution very much. Anyway, this particular verse always appealed to us very much because the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, 5,000 years ago, is talking about a revolution in the impious lives of the world's misdirected civilization. So this was very, very important, that this one of the purposes of ISKCON was actually to change the world, was to create change. In my initiation letter I received in early 1973, Prabhupada wrote to us. There was, I think, three or four of us that were getting initiated, and he gave us our spiritual names, and he said, actually the background of this is that he had just been having some interview with some professor in Europe, and he was saying that this professor was saying the real problems of life are, overpopulation, the economy, peace, these kind of things. And Prabhupada was saying, no, the real problems of life are spiritual problems, birth, death, disease, and old age. What is missing is spiritual knowledge. So he told us that little story. Then his instruction was to us, he said, so you are all intelligent boys and girls. He was very kind. Therefore, my request to you is that you study the science of Krishna consciousness and solve all the problems of the world by systematic propaganda as far as you're able to do it. So first of all, Srila Prabhupada told me, mind strike, I simply have to solve all the problems of the world. But then he gave me an out. He said, as far as you're able to do it. So then that was so typical of Srila Prabhupada, because he gave us the greatest encouragement. His expectations were so high, but yet he was also very kind and realized our limitations at the same time. But solving the problems of the world through systematic propaganda. In other words, organizing preaching, organizing book distribution and literature and preaching programs and like that. You know, so that was very, very, very clear that Srila Prabhupada expected that from us. Of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, 5:29, Prabhupada says that that verse is the peace formula. It's, you know, because the purpose was to teach the world to live happily through spiritual knowledge. How are people going to do that? How are we going to find happiness, peace throughout the world? By knowing Krishna as the enjoyer of sacrifice, the Lord of all the planets, the well-wisher of all living beings, then one attains shantim, peace. So if we know Krishna is the enjoyer, the proprietor and friend, all our problems are solved. And we'll be happy. And the world will be peaceful. Now, of course, there's a big gap of explanation in there of how one leads to the other. And of course, that's our job. We have to fill in those pieces as we talk to people and as we explain the process of Krishna consciousness and how Krishna consciousness is actually the panacea for all the problems of the world. How peace, prosperity, economic stability, everything ecological, balance, everything can be achieved through the institution of Krishna conscious principles. The second purpose was to specifically teach devotion to Krishna through the Vedic scriptures, particularly the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. So that was right in his purposes. He mentions Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita specifically. So these are our most important Vaishnava literatures. We were talking about earlier, we have Srimad Bhagavatam class every morning. Bhagavad Gita class was in the evening. Or if you don't have Bhagavad Gita class, hopefully everybody's reading Bhagavad Gita on your own or with others. So we need to have faith in the words of the Bhagavatam itself. In the very beginning, it says, this beautiful Bhagavatam compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? I could put in a little political editorial here about needing to read so many other books, but I think we'll just hear the words of the Bhagavatam and it's sufficient. Not that we don't read other books, not that Prabhupada didn't want us to actually translate and present many, many books in the Vedic literatures, the Goswami's literature, etc., etc. But we have to understand that the Bhagavatam is actually the king of all literature. You know, it is sufficient unto itself for God realization. Okay. Propagating the chanting of the holy name. Of course, we know that the Sankirtan Jagya is the Yuga Dharma. It is the practice of self-realization. It is what will bring us out of materialistic consciousness. It is what will give us understanding of God and what will bring us understanding of our true nature as servants of God and develop that loving relationship. And so, Srila Prabhupada demonstrated the importance of the chanting. Of course, in Tompkins Square Park, he encouraged daily street sankirtan. Someone had mentioned earlier the Ratha Yatras. Very, very wonderful. Kirtans in the temple. We have so many kirtans. Now, we just finished this kirtan mela in Alachua. The one that we had this, you know, huge program that Satchinanda Swami did not come to. He was scheduled and, you know, we had this whole program and, you know, seminars based around Satchinanda Swami about his Dharma workshops. He had visa trouble and he wasn't able to come. So what they did instead, Madhava and some others were there, they had just had 4 days of a kirtan mela. So no real loss. I mean, it's a tremendous loss not having associations of Satchinanda Swami, but also we were able to have so many days of chanting. And this is becoming, of course, more and more current right now. We know, of course, there's many devotees also in North Carolina at the Sadhusanga retreat where they're doing a lot of chanting. Of course, we didn't used to have special retreats for chanting, but, you know, they were just part of festivals, part of Ratha Yatras. And you can see the effect. You can see the effect of chanting and the effect that it has on people. I particularly like Ratha Yatras. We put on 10 or 11 in Florida every year. We go to all the beaches. We put on Ratha Yatras. I mean, literally 10 or 11 times. Some of the devotees there are just very, very inspired. This is their life and soul, Ratha Yatra. And you see the expressions on people's faces of some past remembrance. Like something, there's something within them that's, you know, becoming alive and becoming awakened. It's either seeing Lord Jagannath or just the hearing of the chanting of the holy name, and so many people join in chanting, and even if they don't, they hear the chanting. Chanting is very, very powerful. Vishnuchakravarti Thakur explains that, of course, our first principle, our first in the process of Krishna consciousness is Shraddha, development of faith. But where does faith come from? If I don't have faith, how am I going to do anything else? How am I going to begin a bhajan? How am I going to give up so many things in Arthanavritti without that faith? And Vishwanath says that initial faith comes about the living entity through Agyata Sukriti, through accumulation of devotional acts, the Sukriti, which is a little different than punya. It's not karma. It's devotional activity. Some connection. It's explained. And in fact, it's even specifically, I can't remember whether it's him or whether it's in the Nectar Devotion where Rupa Goswami mentioned, they specifically mention things like seeing the Ratha Yatra cart. It's mentioned by Acharyas as these examples, and hearing the holy name, hearing the chanting of these examples of Agyata Sukriti, unknown, unseen spiritual benefit that will accumulate to the point that the living entity, no matter how conditioned he is in the material world, will eventually develop a little glimmer of faith in the heart. And when that little glimmer of faith develops, and then they can appreciate this Hare Krishna movement, appreciate chanting, maybe they'll take a book, maybe they'll hear the devotees, they'll get opportunity for more association. Their spiritual life has begun. And then it's over for them. They can't stay in the material world too many more lifetimes. They have to go back to Godhead. It's all over. Anyway. I only hope that works for me that way. Another thing that's very important in this purpose is that it's specifically mentioned to teach the Sankirtan movement as revealed in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Srila Prabhupada did not neglect, even in these sort of legal purposes, to mention that this movement is based upon the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It is Lord Chaitanya's mission, it is Lord Chaitanya's instruction, it is Lord Chaitanya's inspiration and order by which Srila Prabhupada came to America and by which we are all continuing the work of Srila Prabhupada. So, Lord Chaitanya is always there. Sometimes we find we have a little bit of difficulty sometimes in our preaching, especially with new temples and congregations, especially we have many people coming from India now and they don't know about Lord Chaitanya. So we all have this tendency to say, well, let's try to get Radha Krishna, that people know. But we're not ready for it often because of the very high standard of deity worship. But if we bring Gauranitai, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to people, and if they don't know about Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, that leaves us with a very simple solution. We tell them about Lord Chaitanya. We explain who Lord Chaitanya was, what the Sankirtan movement is about, and how he brought the holy name to every town and village in the world. Okay. And of course, the publication distribution of books. There's countless quotes and examples of Prabhupada. We could spend a whole seminar, and I imagine Vaisheshika Prabhu will be spending a whole seminar on this topic. So We don't have to spend so much time. I'm sure that it will be covered by other speakers during this weekend. But I just thought it was interesting. Actually, this is end of 2014, so it's increased. There's been another year of sales. I don't know how many were sold last year. But it topped 500 million. 500 million of Srila Prabhupada's books have been sold worldwide since the beginning of BBT and the book publication distribution. The only books that have sold more in the history of the world are the Bible, the Quran, and the quotations of Chairman Mao. And believe me, I don't think those several hundred million people in China had a lot of choice whether they were going to purchase the quotations of Chairman Mao. So I think in terms of voluntary, you know, we certainly can go above that. Anyway, Prabhupada's books have sold more than all of Stephen King, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, all combined. So, and it's very remarkable, most people weren't looking for them. They didn't go to a bookstore saying, I'm looking for Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, for the most part. Actually, I did. That's where I first got the Bhagavad Gita, was in a bookstore. In 1971 or 72 in DeKalb, Illinois, somehow or another, our little bookstore had Srila Prabhupada's, you know, I think it was not the little edition, but the, you know, the, I think it had just been printed by Macmillan, you know, the full edition. And so I got that. It's very remarkable. But for the most part, we gave these books to people on the streets and everywhere, airports, everywhere. And it's not that they didn't appreciate them or accept them, but it wasn't what they started out that day looking for. I'm going to go see if I can find a book on spiritual knowledge, you know, particularly by some Indian Swami and maybe something about Krishna. No, they didn't know. And of course, how many languages have they been translated into? Isn't it over 100? Does anyone know? Over 100, right? Over 100 languages. So Srila Prabhupada's books have just gone throughout the world in so many ways, in so many languages. So we can see that this particular purpose of Prabhupada's mission was certainly executed. Of course, we have a long way to go. And not everybody. There's a lot more than 500 million people in the world. So there's a lot of people that still don't have Srila Prabhupada's books. But we're trying to increase in North America specifically. We increased over 20% 2 years in a row, 10% last year, and we're trying to do another 10% this year. The temples in my zone, I think, are falling a little behind. I have to do some work on this, and maybe some others do too. You know, but it's something that we need to do. We need to do for Srila Prabhupada, because this was Prabhupada's heart. You know, he put his life to his last breath to translate these books for us and for the world. I'm going to turn to the other aspect. We've talked about the outreach, the preaching work of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness as Prabhupada envisioned it, how he developed it, and how it is still carrying on. But in addition, he wanted to bring the members together. In these purposes, bringing the members together to worship Krishna, develop temples and holy places of pilgrimage, and to teach the principles of simple living and high thinking. So we know from the Nectar of Instruction, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been established to facilitate these six kinds of loving exchanges between devotees. The life of the Krishna Consciousness Society is nourished by these six types of loving exchanges among the members. Therefore, people must be given the chance to associate with the devotees of ISKCON. Now, it's interesting because in Srila Prabhupada's purport on the Nectar of Instruction verse, which is mainly talking about the internal relationships among devotees with the six loving exchanges, Prabhupada then takes that and extends it to how we should be promoting those same six loving exchanges with all of the non-devotees and people throughout the world. But of course, we can't really do that unless very well or very effectively or have much impact unless we're doing it ourselves. So it's these loving exchanges between devotees, Prabhupada says, are the life of the Krishna conscious society is nourished by them. I think we have another seminar coming up in the next over this weekend about devotee care. So these kind of ideas will be talked about in more depth. But we can see how these were all anticipated by Srila Prabhupada and specifically mentioned within these foundational documents and the seven purposes. So sometimes we don't think about this so much, about what it means to bring the devotees together to worship Krishna. Obviously, we can put everybody in a room and we can be in front of the deities worshiping Krishna. But we also, this also needs to nourish the devotion, and it needs to bring the members together. So this is very important. And as there's been a lot of talk about devotee care and a lot of discussion, there'll be more discussion. I guess I'd like to simply say that one of the most important types of care that we give to one another is spiritual care. You know, my wife and I have been counseling devotees for many, many years, couples and individuals, and my wife does much more than I do. Being a GBC member now, I think people are a little bit, you know, intimidated. You know, but what we have found is that devotees have many difficulties like everyone else. We all have obstacles in our path of devotional service, and sometimes we need help from one another. We need to take that association devotees. We need to find a mentor or a guru or a shiksha guru or a counselor or whoever it may be sometimes, or maybe it's just a friend. Maybe it's a good friend, it's someone who can we can talk to, or a family member. But we often need help in the problems that we encountered in this world due to our lifetimes in this material world, our countless anartas that we bring with us as we begin engaging this process of Krishna consciousness. So as we help one another, help other devotees in many different ways, whether it's counseling, mentoring, as a guru, we keep in mind that our object is to help with those obstacles for the purpose of developing and strengthening Krishna consciousness. And conversely, strengthening our Krishna consciousness automatically helps all those other problems. It's actually a fact. I know, and I say this based upon, as I said, many, many years of experience. We find that devotees who have good sadhana, devotees who are sincere and dedicated, which is most devotees, and many devotees, even if their sadhana is a little weak, are sincere and dedicated. But particularly if those sincere and dedicated devotees attend to their sadhana and their chanting and their reading and hearing, we find that they make very, very good progress. And it's much easier to help them. Sometimes all they, you know, sometimes it's a very simple process, because it's really our spiritual life which gives us strength. It's our spiritual life, our internal sadhana, and our internal and external. It's our development of the processes of bhakti yoga that clear all the unwanted things from the heart, that clear the dust from the mirror of the mind, and actually enable us to clearly understand Krishna consciousness and be able to put in perspective those problems and issues which we experience. Because if we really think about it, all of the problems we have to do with the gross and subtle body, don't they? And usually it's the subtle body. Usually it's the mind. The biggest problem we all have is the mind. I've said this in several classes, but since you're kind of a new audience, I can repeat some of my stuff. It's fairly easy for us to understand we're not our body, isn't it? And if you don't thoroughly understand you're not your body, wait till you're my age. Then you are, not only do you understand you're not your body, you're really happy that you're not your body. Because the body becomes less and less of a friend and more of just sort of an obstacle and an impediment as we start kind of basically falling apart, you know, which is natural. The body's like a machine. You know, you have an old car and keeps going, you get 200,000 miles on it, but you keep plugging along and fixing it up. Same thing. You know, so that we can understand. But most of us tend to identify with the mind, right? The mind, the intelligence, and the ego. We think, the soul or whatever, the jiva, considers what we think, what I feel, what I like, what I don't like, you know, what are my favorites, my not favorites, my tastes. This is me. I mean, we could stop and think from it and say, no, I know it's not. But in a day-to-day basis, we often do. It's natural. We've been in this material world a long, long time, identifying with this body, identifying with the subtle body, so it's natural that we have these strong identifications. How do we break those identifications? Obviously the process of bhakti yoga, of hearing and chanting, and one of the best other ways, or I could probably, you could say, a concurrent or supplementary or supportive way is sadhusanga, the association of devotees. So that's one of the reasons we come together as devotees. Not just because it's the Sankirtan Jagan we're supposed to, congregational chanting. Thank you, Prabhu. No, but we give support. We give nourishment to one another. We give help to one another. We give guidance to one another. We learn from one another. It's very, very important. So that we can break these attachments to the body and the mind and focus on our relationship with Krishna. Fifth purpose, to develop temples and holy places of pilgrimage. Prabhupada showed how both establishing temples and book distribution and preaching are needed. I thought this was I'm going to read the whole quote. I don't have it all up here. This is from Adi Lila 7.164. When Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami went to Vrindavan, there was not a single temple, but by their preaching they were gradually able to construct various temples. For preaching, construction of temples is also necessary. The Goswamis not only engaged in writing books, but also constructed temples, because both are needed for preaching work. Now that the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has taken up this task of preaching the cult of Lord Chaitanya, its members should not only construct temples in every town and village of the globe, but also distribute the books that have already been written and further increase the number of books. Both distribution of books and construction of temples must continue side by side in parallel lines. So this was Prabhupada's formula, and I'm sure many of us have heard this idea of the parallel tracks that Prabhupada talked about, the Gostinandi and the Bhajanandi. In other words, that we have temple worship on one side and we have the preaching activity on the other. And they work together. They work in connection. They support one another. And Prabhupada wanted both. He wanted book distribution and he also wanted temple construction. And this is emphasizing, of course, what Rompad Swami was saying, that it really is really more about the construction of temples, even more, because all temples are places of pilgrimage. They are all holy sites. So we take the example from the Goswamis, and they took their instruction directly from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked them to uncover the places of pilgrimage, to construct temples, and to write books on the science and philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So that is exactly what Srila Prabhupada did. Took up this the same activity and the same purpose. To teach simple living and high thinking, or to bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler, more natural way of life. So Prabhupada had this vision of farm communities right from the beginning. He said our farm project, well, of course, in 1968, he established New Vrindavan with the help of his devotees, his disciples. That was like the movement was barely begun, and we had this farm out in the hills of West Virginia. Letter to Rupanuga, Prabhupada said, our farm projects are an extremely important part of our movement. We must become self-sufficient by growing our own grains and producing our own milk. Then there will be no question of poverty. So develop these communities as far as possible. So something that Prabhupada emphasized, very important principle. We have not fulfilled this very well. I think Gita Nagari may be fulfilling this quite nicely, but in many places of the country and the world, we haven't been doing it so much. So it's something that we certainly need to do because it was a key foundational element into the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. And Prabhupada had been thinking this way for a long time. Most of you are probably very familiar with this. In 1956, a Bhaktivedanta article, 10 years before Srila Prabhupada came to America, he talked about the vision of Gita Nagari. The Gita Nagari will therefore be the main preaching center of the supreme authority of Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. It shall be proclaimed from that place that Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the absolute enjoyer of all benefits derived from all kinds of work, all kinds of cultivation of knowledge, that he is the absolute proprietor of all kinds of works. He is absolute proprietor of all material and spiritual worlds. With such knowledge will be fostered from the vantage of Gita Nagari. At that time, only real peace and prosperity will usher in the world so anxiously waited by the people of the world. And of course, Prabhupada gave, you know, many lectures. I guess I didn't have the rest of it on here. Okay. He even talked about, I think I skipped that part, the beasts, the birds, the reptiles, plants, and trees. Everyone is part of this. All living entities are part of this vision. Working in harmony together, in harmony with nature, all for the purpose of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada wanted us to develop these spiritual communities. He talks specifically about farm projects, but we have, of course, many city temples and other types of communities all over the world. And it's very important that to fulfill this other aspect of Srila Prabhupada's vision in his purposes of ISKCON, that we develop communities that are true spiritually based. And so that means that members are cared for, their needs are provided, there's mutual concern and loving relationships. I talked about that a little bit earlier, how that necessary that is, that we support one another in these relationships. But it also means that we share a common cause, a shared preaching spirit. Sometimes devotees, particularly some of my generation devotees, they kind of like the idea of all coming together, and now we're old and kind of time to retire, and we need to sort of, you know, just sort of kick back a little, enjoy, you know, we can talk about how I went on Sankirtan 40 years ago and this and that, and I did my bit. Now we're kind of like slowing down, it's retirement time, and we really want to just get together with one another and enjoy relationships. That's all right, but I think Srila Prabhupada meant something more for us. That community spirit means that we are also focused on the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And that's the best way for communities to come together. When we come together to spread Krishna consciousness, to share part of Prabhupada's vision, whether it's establishing protection of the cows or whether it's distribution of books, when we're focused on Srila Prabhupada's mission, then we are very, very happy coming together. And it's very nice. I sometimes think about people that I have shared service with over the years, and some of them are people that if I was in the material world, I don't think they would necessarily be my friends. I might not even like them very much, and they might not like me very much. But we had very nice relationships of service. And sometimes people like this who I didn't share so much materially, I've served with for years. You know, and they are close, and they are good friends to this day. Not because of our material similarities, but because of the commonality of our shared service, our shared love for Srila Prabhupada, you know, our desire to be devotees of Krishna, understanding Krishna as the common father of all of us. It is by those spiritual principles that we become community, we become family, right? So these things are very, very important. And finally, I want to talk about the importance of understanding Srila Prabhupada's position, which is also going to be spoken about in much more detail by, I think, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu. Is he talking about Prabhupada as the founder of Acharya? And don't miss that. Rabindra Swarup is, you know, of course, as we know, an amazing thinker and writer and speaker. And so we'll definitely look forward to hearing much more about this. So I'm just going to touch on it very, very briefly about. But it's very important that as we're celebrating the 50th anniversary, it's about Prabhupada. That's what it's all about. You know, 50th anniversary of what? The founding of ISKCON? ISKCON is Srila Prabhupada. Founding of ISKCON is Srila Prabhupada. The other devotees didn't even know what it was about. They just signed their name on something. This was Prabhupada's vision. So we know that Krishna delivers the conditioned souls, but he comes in the form of the spiritual master. This is Krishna's plan. So he comes as the Diksha Guru, Shiksha Gurus, other gurus, the Param Guru. For those of you who are next generation devotees, Prabhupada said the grandfather is sometimes more merciful than the father. So you can take shelter of Srila Prabhupada and gain his mercy. And we can all gain that mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Because he was the one who was uniquely qualified to spread Lord Chaitanya's mission all over the world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj sent others to go and preach. He sent some of his disciples to England. They came back with very few results. But he once said, never mind, Abai will do. He knew that Srila Prabhupada is the one who would succeed, who would go with this great total conviction as a pure devotee of the Lord, as a pure devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and succeed in establishing the Krishna Conscious Movement. So Srila Prabhupada's position is not just for now. It is not for while there's a few of us remaining Prabhupada disciples that maybe have some nostalgic idea of Srila Prabhupada and think about the old days. No. Srila Prabhupada is the preeminent Shiksha Guru for all time. Srila Prabhupada is the founder of ISKCON, of which we are all members. It is his books that are going to be the law books for the next 10,000 years. And he is the center and the unifying force within ISKCON. Isn't it? Isn't that what brings us all together? We are all here in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. We are worshiping Srila Prabhupada. We are reading Srila Prabhupada's books. And doesn't matter who our guru is, where we're from, what part of the world we're from, what language we speak, we all share that. We are all part of Srila Prabhupada's movement in this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So, I wanted to read this statement about, this is the GBC statement on the position of Srila Prabhupada. I'm sure some of you have read it or seen it, but I'm always I always find that many people haven't seen this. And the GBC passed this, when was it, Maharaj, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? Something like that, 3 or 4 years ago. I remember we had many discussions about it. Many additions and editings and this and that. And I'll just read part of it here. First, it talks about the ways that Krishna comes, how Krishna delivers through the process of diksha, shiksha, guru, through the scriptures, through so many ways. And then it says, within these cooperative elements, Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is the preeminent Shiksha Guru for all members of ISKCON. All members of ISKCON for all generations are encouraged to seek shelter of Srila Prabhupada. All members of ISKCON are entitled and encouraged to have a personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada through his books, teachings, service, and his ISKCON society. So when we talk about Srila Prabhupada, we're not talking about a historical figure that he did something wonderful 50 years ago or up to 40 years ago. We're talking about Srila Prabhupada as the living, spiritually alive, Shiksha Guru for all time, the inspiration for devotees. I know devotees who weren't even born when Srila Prabhupada was on the planet, who've had dreams about Srila Prabhupada or been inspired by Srila Prabhupada or realizations based on Srila Prabhupada's writings and books. Srila Prabhupada continues to make devotees. Srila Prabhupada continues to inspire devotees, and Srila Prabhupada continues to inspire this International Society for Krishna Consciousness to further grow and develop for the next 10,000 years. So thank you very much for your great patience. You've all listened very attentively to somewhat of a long-winded program here. We have a few minutes. Does someone like to add something or any other questions or comments? Maharaj, would you like to add anything?
I always wanted to say something, you know me.
What's that?
I always wanted to say something. As you were going through the seven purposes and you had a certain way of viewing the internal and the external elements, just a little sharing of some people that are part of two of the particular elements, they get really enthusiastic about education is every part of, it's every one of the seven. And the book distributors say, Vaisheshika Prabhu is going to say it, and his team is going to say it, it's there in every one of the seven. It's got, it stands on its own, but it's there in every one of the seven. So it's not that that's wrong and this is right, or just, you know, it's something that's so comprehensive as, in, you know, seven purposes, to have it so comprehensive like it is, it's a masterpiece. As you said at the beginning, it's inspired by Krishna. Very, very, very clear. So one can look at it in different ways, just like different ways of looking at Krishna and appreciating Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. Others? Any thoughts? Any thoughts about how we can better understand them or realize them or anything? There's a up here.
So how do we not get caught up in thinking like that? Like only one way. It's very easy to think, oh, I only need to distribute books, or I only need to do this or that. How do we keep the vision broad in all aspects?
Thank you. Good question. And I think the answer to that is really studying and reading and hearing Srila Prabhupada. And I even found things like, a lot of you I'm sure have heard those memory tapes where the devotees discuss. I mean, I think those are wonderful. I love hearing those all the past. Because not only they are nectarine pastimes, but they give a flavor of Srila Prabhupada's instruction. You know, it's described that in relationship to the guru, that one should follow the words, the example, and the mood. Those three things, they should be in connection. So you can take isolated words from Srila Prabhupada, but you might miss the mood. And Srila Prabhupada's mood was always one of great encouragement. Srila Prabhupada told a Tulsi Pujari that worshiping Tulsi was the most important service you can do. And Srila Prabhupada told book distributors that they were doing the most important service, etc., etc. In other words, Srila Prabhupada encouraged all service. Of course, you all know, you know the story of when Prabhupada went to Atlanta and all the book distributors were there. Okay, you all know that story. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada, they all expect him to say, what pleases you most to be book distribution? He said, what pleases me is that you love Krishna. So that was the bottom line, wasn't it? And if book distribution was one way to please Krishna, wonderful. But the Bajari is also pleasing Krishna, and the person who sweeps the floor, and and we can go on down the list of every service to Krishna is very pleasing. It's really more a question of one's heart, of what you put into that service. Taking care of your children and raising them in Krishna consciousness is a very, very important. In fact, Srila Prabhupada told one senior Mataji, Prabhu, that she was a very leading pujari, and he told her that worshiping your children is more important than worshiping the deity. Because I think, you know, maybe she was a little imbalanced, you know, a little bit neglecting the children too much, you know. In other words, he might tell somebody else who was only taking care of the children to also do some other service too. So in other words, it's a question of balance, you know. But this is how Prabhupada dealt with things. First, he was very encouraging to everybody. He emphasized the absolute nature of service. If we start saying one service is higher than another, then we are taking it off of the spiritual platform and putting it on the material platform where one is higher and one is lower. Right? So we just have to remember these things. You know. And at the same time, we also want to use our own abilities and propensities. Now then, what do we do best? What can I do effectively for Krishna? And then do it wholeheartedly. Okay. Thank you. That's a nice question. Anybody else? Someone over here?
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. I was having a discussion with one devotee about farming and how it's something that you explained that is something that we haven't succeeded very much, and it was such an important part of Prabhupada's vision in terms of, you know, self-sufficient communities that shows the example of a high thinking, simple living. And when we are in a country in which, you know, there's so much farming that is going on, is sort of this devotee is interesting in farming, and we were thinking, well, how this is something that hasn't come about? Is it that we're not necessarily putting too much emphasis on that part? We're taking, you know, be more emphasizing in the preaching aspect rather than in the.
That may be a question of emphasis and priority. It's also difficult. One of the early presidents, I think the first person here who was running Gita Nagari, what was his name? Paramananda. I was having some discussion with him, and he said, you know what we try to do in ISKCON, he says, we take so many acres that a family farm, you know, supported a family, and we try to support 50 devotees on it. You know, so our, you know, and take care of the deities, and, you know, so our model is challenging. It's a little more challenging. You know, you probably need thousands of acres, you know, to, I don't know, how many acres are here? A lot. 300, that's great. Anyway, so, but the thing is, we may not be able to be completely self-sufficient, but we can demonstrate, I think. Like even in Alachua, and you know, when I was driving across, I drove from Baltimore, and especially as I got into this part of Pennsylvania, I was amazed by, I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, the farmland, you know, all these farms and dairies and hay fields, right? I mean, this is very, very nice. And it's not like that in Florida. Florida's really tough to grow things. Although one thing I will say is that your weather here is about like Florida. You know, is this unusually hot? Because this is the same temperature as I left Alachua this morning. Anyway, but in Alachua, we don't have such good farmland, but we do have cows, and we're starting to a milking program, and we're starting a an eco-teaching farm, you know, where we're trying to demonstrate self-sufficiency, you know, building different types of housing. In other words, even whatever we can do, and I think we're all starting to catch on a little bit, that we need to do this. You know, people are looking towards us, or they should be looking towards us, to be the examples and be the leaders in so many areas, whether it's sustainable living, you know, ecology, whether it's, you know, and particularly protection of cows and agriculture. And so I'm seeing some signs. New Vrindavan is doing a lot more. They've had a great increase in the last 2 or 3 years. They've got a nice milking herd now, and, you know, which had dwindled down to almost nothing, just taking care of 100 old steers, you know. Now they have a nice herd of 8 or 9 milking cows, and I know you have a big herd here. But so I'm seeing some increases in more awareness throughout the world. You know, so I'm hopeful. You know, I realize, yeah, you know, and I think it's something that some of us didn't spend a lot of energy and thought on. And recently I think more and more of us are thinking about how important this is, and how we have to really, really stress it, and we need to give encouragement to our farm projects.
Labor Day weekend. That's our topic.
Here?
Here.
Oh, having a whole retreat on... Oh, that is a Kalakanta from Europe coming? And
well, Shivaram Maharaj is coming.
Oh, wow, that's nice.
And a bunch of speakers that... on the topic is Varnashram. But everyone wants to talk about how to get it started,
yeah.
How to get a little thing started.
That's fantastic.
That's Labor Day weekend.
Sounds great. How many of you have been to the farm in Hungary? Hungary, a couple of you? It's amazing, isn't it? It's just an amazing place. You know, I stayed there a couple, 3 days, about 8 years ago, and I stayed with one of the... householder's house, you know, with no electricity or anything, and it was completely comfortable. It was great. It was wonderful. I mean, they really have figured out. Of course, they had a lot of money from the government and things. You know, that really helps. You know, but they figured out how to do it, and it's just an amazing project. You know, they're a great example, and it's nice that Shivaram Swami is coming and he can give some insights. He's of course. Been thinking deeply about this for many, many years. Yeah. Anything else? Go ahead. Up here, in the front.
Well, I was thinking about the
tendency that to slacken in missionary activity and sort of rest in one's laurels, kind of. And that can also happen even without one being aged. I mean, it happens just, I'm feeling part of a community now, yeah. And it just, you know. So what, I'm thinking of the Mormon faith, for example, and they keep their missionary activity pretty strong by having 2 years of their youth mandatory out on missionary activity.
They've cut it to 18 months now. But anyway, every one of them does it. I think it's a fantastic example, isn't it? I wish we could do that.
It's amazing.
You get all this youthful energy out. Yeah. No, you're right. I was just picking on my age bracket because I feel more comfortable, you know, doing that than I didn't want to pick on other people. But it's a tendency for all of us, you know, because it's an austerity, right? It's called Sankirtan Jagya, right? It's not a big austerity, but it is some Jagya. It is some austerity. You know, and to put ourselves out there, and people may not like it, and they say things, you know what I mean? You know, it can be uncomfortable, or it takes time and energy, and I'm tired after working all day. And, you know, and in Nalachwa, it's just too hot to go out during the summer, you know, when it's 90 degrees still at 7 o'clock at night. You know, so we all have a lot of good reasons not to, right? So we have to just keep talking about it, and keep, through association devotees, encouraging one another, you know, to somehow or another do something. It doesn't have to be a huge thing. You know, most of our devotees now are congregational members. Most of our devotees are working jobs, taking care of families. It's a fact of life. So it doesn't have to be that you're full-time engaged, but you do something. You do a little bit. You help in some way. You help the missionary work. If nothing else, donate to the temples and the book distribution and to those that are, you know, that those who are working. Sometimes I find that, oh gosh, I can't help myself with these political announcements, you know. But sometimes I find that our temples are like the last source of donations. People give their money everywhere else, but they don't think about the temple. I was giving the disciples course that's mandatory. That some of you taken that? I think it's a fantastic course. I was fortunate. I gave the course in Lacho about a month ago. And one of the very, very nice devotee I know, he's from Jacksonville, really nice congregational member. He's changed 16 rounds. He's getting ready for initiation. And I was talking about, you know, serving the mission of ISKCON. And he said to me, and I know him, he's a really, very nice devotee. He said, well, what do I have to do with the mission of ISKCON? He says, isn't my connection really just with my guru? And I said to him, are you living in a temple community? Yes. Isn't your daughter going to the ISKCON school? Yes. Isn't, you know, I kind of went like, and he finally goes, oh yeah, I am. You know, it's like, you know, if you can't relate to some abstract concept of ISKCON's international mission, at least relate to the temple that you're going to and serving the deity and think, you know, and talk to every temple president in North America, you know, and see if they're just rolling in money and they don't need anything. No. Temples are struggling a little bit. It's tough. It's tough maintaining these temples, and we need everyone's help. Okay, that's the end of my paid political announcement, or unpaid. I think we're out of time. Thank you so much for your time and attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, and have a wonderful weekend. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Tamahar Prabhu. I'm sure most of the devotees, if not all of the devotees, are familiar with the seven purposes of ISKCON, but it's always enlightening to hear from those who are so dedicated, such as yourself. And so thank you so much for discussing the seven purposes of ISKCON.
Thank you for the opportunity.
His Grace Tamahar Prabhu Ki Jai. And in reference to one of the purposes that you were mentioning about bringing the devotees together and closer to each other and closer to Krishna, as well as appreciating a simpler way of life. There is a devotee that came in while I was introducing you, and we want to welcome him. He's a very special devotee, a long-standing servant of Shishirada Damodar. He's actually been conducting retreats such as this one for over 25 years, actually. When did you first start, Maharaj? He didn't count. I remember it was the VIHE or the Gita Nagari Institute for Higher Education. And he would attract so many devotees from all over the world to come here and Sri Gita Nagari Dham and conduct classes and seminars. And he's still doing that today in 2016. And glorification of Srila Prabhupada and our ISKCON movement. So we welcome His Holiness Prabhupada Swami.
I also want to add that it seems like Maharaj's ability to keep developing new material and new ideas is just inexhaustible. I remember you, a couple years ago, you were working on Brahma Samhita and so many things, and now I heard a wonderful report. You were in Atlanta two or three weeks ago, and I heard this wonderful report of seminars you gave on clearing the anartas within us. Was that it? Something like that. So it's like, you know, it's just amazing that you, I don't know, and most of you know, but if you don't know, Prabhupada Swami is also one of our most active and dedicated GBC members who spends a tremendous amount of time with the management and leadership aspects. So it's not like he's just sitting in his room all day reading scripture and coming up with classes. He does this along with everything else he's doing. So Chris Rumpad Swami, I just have to say, since I may not get another opportunity, that he's a great inspiration to me and I think also a wonderful friend and mentor, and so much appreciate his association. Jai.
His Holiness Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.